As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places. Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from our own tradition. The Reverend David Schwartz serves two congregations in Chicago. He and his wife Terry co-minister the First Unitarian Church, and he also serves the Beverly Unitarian Church. Telling the story and then preaching against it as an end of history or happily ever after story, the independent state doesn't last. The religious freedom doesn't last. The point being that you light the lamp precisely because you don't know that it's going to last, and you do it anyway. If you have one day of oil, you don't light it hoping for a miracle. You light it because you have the one day of oil. The hope isn't to do a thing and bring about the end of history, but to stay faithful to the promises we make.
Thank you. Thank you, Barb. So this is not at all the right time of year for the Hanukkah story. But that is what the lamp that David Schwartz is referring to. The story is one of revolution and faith, and that seems very appropriate right now. Some 160 or so years ago, before the Common Era, the Greek ruler Antiochus doubled down on his attempts to squash Judaism in the Syrian kingdom. He marched into Jerusalem and vandalized the temple, decreed that the Jewish practices were punishable by death, and sent in powerful enforcers to make the Jewish people worship the way he wanted them to. One local leader named Matthias refused to be made an example of and escaped with a small band of rebels. And the rebels gathered others who would become the Maccabees. The Maccabees went back to Jerusalem and reclaimed the temple 3 years after it was defiled, destroying the idols that had been put up there, putting up a new altar. And when they went to relight the sacred lamp, they found that they only had enough oil to burn for one day. And yet they lit it, and it burned for 8 days. This is the origin of the tradition of the menorah and the celebration of Hanukkah that happens in December. So in our reading, David reminds us that the inspiration that comes from the story isn't about how it ends up, because we know, looking back on our history and our current times, that there has not been a happily ever after ending for the Jews. And the same is often true in our lives. We enter each day unsure of how it will end. Indeed, if we're truly honest with ourselves, we're actually unsure if it will end with our hearts still beating, much less intact. Our presence here is an example. We entered into a partnership, you all and I, 3.5 years ago, based on a growing understanding of how we might work together, how we might complement one another, how we might grow together. And as things do, things have happened in our lives, things have happened in our community that we could not have anticipated. And all that we knew when we started was what the potential was. The same is true for our current stories of justice making and peace building. We didn't hang a Black Lives Matter banner because we believe that's the end of the story. We hung it because it was the one thing we could do in our work, because it was one thing we could do in our work in ending white supremacy culture. We don't march in protests because we think that will solve the problem. We do it because it's a tool that we have to uncover the problem. We didn't vote to become a sanctuary congregation because we believe that move will solve the problem of our neighbors at risk of deportation. We're doing this because we can, because we know or we have the resources to provide some respite for somebody who is living in fear. We don't pull down statues of Confederate soldiers because we think they can all come down at once or because taking them down will erase the painful history they represent. We pull them down because it's offensive to leave them up. And we tell the story of the offense while we're doing it, and we do it one at a time. We've been hearing and singing songs this morning that envision a future way of being as if it were already here. These songs are aspirational. They're hopeful, they're uplifting, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to be hopeful and uplifted. And it's not enough. We also need ways to remember who we are, why we're here, why we're together here, why we're in this work, and how we can hold each other through it. Because sooner or later, we will almost certainly become tired and less easily inspired. Sources of hope that are purely aspirational can lull us into thinking we have an answer to a question or a situation that's unsolvable, especially when we try to fit them into a message we've created as a wished-for, happily ever after story. I want to offer you an example with these words from Dr. Glenn Thomas Rideout, who's the music director for the First UU Congregation in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He writes, "Last summer at General Assembly, I walked out of the sanctuary we had made from the convention center space. As tired as I was, I returned more and more to my deeply introverted default of self, and I passed a woman who had to stop and talk with me. Many religious professionals who have led a morning worship service know this is where the work begins. She walked up to me and said, 'Dr. Rideout,' because she had enough grace to remind me of my title, she gave me the opportunity to resume my church face and posture. She held my hands as if we had known each other for the longest time. She looked into my eyes and she said, 'You know what? I always sing that song. There is more love right here. There is more love right here. I'm going to keep on because I found it. There is more love right here. I don't understand why it is that we don't sing it that way here at GA. We've already found a community of love.' And because she had enough compassion and grace to call me Dr. Rideout, she had given me enough time and opportunity to summon a bit of stillness from the weary remnants of my churchman's posture. She looked into my eyes and spoke and sang to me with her own truth. She asked with genuine curiosity why it is we don't all sing the words she had come to know. I was compelled to respond to the woman I had just met with, 'Thank you for trusting me with this question.' And then I explained to her why I thought it was necessary, particularly with music of people of color, that we enter and examine these songs with more curiosity than colonization. I thanked her, and I explained that for those of us who live with the privilege of knowing love, it can be difficult to understand the perspective of one who lives without such a privilege. I explained that it can be difficult to understand the lived experience of those who have had trouble finding the evidence of love in their immediate vicinity, in their church, in their neighborhood, in their city, in their nation, even in their planet. I thanked her, and I explained that for some who don't share the privilege of perceiving love right here, moving toward that idea of privilege had become a vital practice of Black faith. I offered that if we, as a spiritual community of Unitarian Universalists, populated by well-meaning people, are to mean anything to the lives and deaths of people of color, we must begin by learning, not squelching, the forms of expression that arise from these living perspectives. And she said, 'Thank you. I've never heard it expressed that way. I've never understood it that way. And I will never sing it that same way again.' He finishes, "When we inhabit the music, the forms of expression of people who lived their lives along the margins of notice, we must notice that we have entered holy ground, a sacred sense, a sacred space of learning, a sacred space of relationship." It's a long metaphor for what I'm trying to say. What does this have to do with perseverance? I want to bring us back to our reading, to this idea that our hope is not toward a particular ending, but to be faithful to the promises we make, which is, I think, a lot of what this piece by Dr. Rideout is about. That we light the lamp fully knowing we only have one day of oil and we don't know if it's going to last. And we do it anyway. We move into relationship anyway. We ask a question, even if we're completely oblivious to what the answer might be. We ask the question, even if it causes discomfort. I've said before that we don't actually know what a society not based on white supremacy looks like, because we've never had one in the history of this nation. We don't know what it would look like to base our society on equity, on compassion, on opportunity for all, on access to resources for all. We don't know what the end goal actually looks like. Just like the Jews didn't know that the candle would burn, that the lamp would burn for 8 days. So the work before us is to create as we go, pushing back against what we know we don't want, what we know is not fair. I believe that making promises to ourselves and each other about creating something in line with our values is the most important thing. And so to step into the world every day and do one of the things I can do toward that end feels important to me, and possibly even sustainable. So I'm going to invite you to share out loud, just by shouting words out, in the interest of sharing our experiences with each other, because that's one of the ways I think we find hope. I invite you to shout out a word or two to answer a couple of questions. The first question is, what is one thing you can do to help create a more welcoming community? Listen.
Love unconditionally.
Show up.
Smile.
Smile. Yeah. Wear name tags. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Follow up.
Share resources.
Recognize when we mess up.
Accept.
Accept.
Yeah.
Greet and talk to newcomers.
Yeah.
Without expectations.
I think that's what I'm saying. Go in without expectations. Thank you.
Cook appropriate
food. Yeah. And what's one thing we can do together?
Sing.
Sorry?
Communicate.
Share.
Hold hands.
We're not going to do that today because it's flu season. Little forewarning. But yes, hold hands. Or bump elbows. We danced in here a couple of weeks ago.
We laugh.
Feel uncertain. We feel uncertain.
And learn.
Share our sorrows.
And joy.
And choice.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you need to be able to do those things? What do you need from your community?
Patience.
Benefit of the doubt.
Trust.
Sometimes invitation. Yep.
Sometimes space.
Communication.
Forgiveness.
Respect.
Yeah. Openness.
Openness. Yeah. I see those buckets filling up. Some of those things we mention are things we do together, that we share together, and that we will continue to do together and share together this month and other months. This month in particular, as we discover what it means to be a people of perseverance, and as we celebrate the history and the perseverance of our Black siblings during Black History Month, we'll share in our covenant groups, the place where we most deeply practice this art of listening each other into being. And being listened to, being heard, is so, so important. We'll sing. We'll sing music of our UU faith, we'll sing music from African and African American traditions, and we'll honor the traditions from which those songs came. And we'll gather in groups small and large, we'll worship, we'll eat, we'll work, we'll play, we'll shovel, we'll fill each other's buckets, and we'll share our lives. And we'll do all of these things in spite of the ever louder voices of hate and fear that are around us. And because of them as well. Because we can. We have promised ourselves through our mission and through our resolutions that we will side with love. And that means we'll do the things we can as we can do them. And we'll receive the things we can as we need them, from each other, and persevere. May it be so, and may we be so.